What should we do in our gardens this weekend?
Well, look, it's been quite cold. As a short-wearing person, I've had 3 days of long pants. That's the first time this year. And so it's hard to get out there in your garden. If it's still wet, if the snow's melted, and if you got it in your area and it's pretty sludgy, don't get out there and dig. You can actually harm your soil that way. You can be raising seed. I mean, it's spring's nearly here, so you can start to sort of raise seed of some of those tender summer crops like your zucchinis, your cucumbers, pumpkin. You'd be putting tomatoes in, just in punnets in a cold frame or in a hot house or in a windowsill, capsicum, chili. All of those plants can sort of, you can start to think of putting those in as seedlings.
Are you ready, Tino?
Always ready, Joel.
Let us kick off with, well, surprise, surprise, it's not Felicity and it's not Judith first up. They have been beaten to the punch for first call of the day by Hugh in Howarth. Hello there, Hugh.
Oh, good morning. Good morning.
Morning, Hugh.
Hello, Tino. Tino, my question is about our orange tree.
Yep.
It bears well every year. Beautiful fruit. We end about ready about the end of October, but I've just been out to have a look at it, and it only seems to have about 8 or 10 oranges on the whole tree this year. What's going wrong? It's about 35 years old.
Wow, a decently established tree then.
The 8 or 10 that are there are looking very healthy and just changing colour, and the tree looks well.
Look, there may have been some kind of issue during the flowering and fruit set where you might have lost blossom. Did you notice it was heavily blossomed this year, or did it... was there a lack of blossom as well?
No, I just can't quite answer that. Took it for granted. Was looking after.
Yes. Look, if
it gets plenty of water in the summertime.
Yeah. Oh, perfect. If it's looking healthy as a tree and it's not looking, you know, like it's being attacked by anything, then I'd say the issue this year has probably been during that flowering and early set of fruiting, something's happened. The wind's blown it, something's run over the tree and knocked off a lot of the blossom. So a scenario's played out like that, and that's where you've had less fruit. Now, the good news is, as you said, the fruit that are on there are usually perfect. You know, they're prize-winning oranges because the tree's only having to put in the effort into that. So I'd say next year, because the tree, if he had a good season, the tree hasn't worked terribly hard, then you might end up with a big crop next year. And to be honest, I'd be knocking, controlling the size of that if it does get a bit out of hand. So,
I think this too would be the year too, that if there is a local show on and they have produce awards, you're going to have the most magnificent oranges. Not many of them, but they'll be great.
about how many years should an orange tree bear?
How many years should it bear? Quite a while. They're not exceptionally long-lived as far as I'm aware. I mean, there's Eureka lemon trees in Hobart that are pushing on 30 to 40 years old, I'd say. But usually I've seen them in New South Wales at fairly old, and certainly in places like Spain, but an actual age, I couldn't quite give you that. I'd say about half a century myself, but
should have a bit more left in it yet.
I'd hope so. I really hope so. I mean, if you've got enough for a thing of orange juice, you know, a litre of orange juice this year, I'm guessing in a normal year at a tree that size and that age, you're going to be getting quite a bit. No. I hope it goes forever for you, mate.
I'll let you know this time next year how it's going.
Good on you, Hugh. Thank you very much for that.
Thanks, mate.
Well, look, according to an article I've just found online, a grower here says that... a well-looked-after tree which can produce well for 50 years or more.
50 years. Yeah, it feels about right for the type of tree that they are and, the way they grow. So, yeah, oh, good. And excellent.
So hopefully Hugh has got another 15 years left in his tree. Patricia is in St Helens. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Joel. Good morning, Tina.
Morning, Kat.
About 3 weeks ago, I put my, excuse me, frog, sweet peas in.
Yes.
And they're just peeping up about some millimetre, some a centimetre.
Yep.
excuse me, sorry.
Clearly you had toad in the hole for breakfast.
yes. and I want to know when I start. It says on the packet not to water till they come up. So when do I start watering them, please, Tina?
If they've formed those first true leaves, if they've pushed out of the ground, then you can start to water them now. Yeah, you're fine to water them now. I mean, obviously, if it's you don't want to be sitting them in wetness for too long, but no, it's usually just as you plant the seed, you give them a good water in, and then
I tend to
wait for them to pop through the surface, usually to form those first true leaves that they get, and then and start watering away. So, but if we do get frosty conditions, that's when it can sort of go a little bit awry. As you start to get that cold sort of settling down, if it's too moist around the plant, then I've found you start to get those problems occurring then. But a good, vigorous young plant, no, they you'd be right to water it now, I reckon.
But they're only about a centimetre high, but some have got leaves on and some haven't.
Oh well, if it's all in one bed and there's quite a few plants, then yeah, wait for the wait for all of them to sort of break the surface and establish themselves, and then give them a water. But yeah, if it's sporadic now, this time next week, I'd say you'd be able to water them all. Looking at the way the weather's going to go, I would hope anyway, because I'm the same. I've got my peas are up at about. Or maybe a little bit more, 2 to 3 centimetres. But, yeah, the germination has been sporadic. So yeah, great.
So sweet peas are the same as normal peas, and I can't wait for the scent and the colours.
Oh, they're so good. Are you the dwarf or are you growing the climbing sweet pea?
Well, I put both in, actually.
Yeah. I love the climbers. I've been growing the dwarfs for the last garden for quite a few years because it was so windy. But the climbing sweet peas, I just love it that scent is right up near your face. They're a fantastic plant.
Good on you, Patricia. Enjoy that. Thank you. Peter is in the northwest. Hello, Peter.
Hello, how are you? Gino, a question about polystyrene bin wag. My son was throwing one out, so I thought I might grab it and add it to my veggie garden soil. Is there any danger in that?
Polystyrene?
Yeah, you know, bean bags, you know, the beans.
Look, there is, as far as long-term leaching, I'm not too sure. I know chickens eat a lot of it if you leave a polystyrene thing out, and they tend not to be too maimed by that. Certainly, there'd be a problem with leaching elements. I know a lot of people that use them as seedling trays, like to raise their seedlings in. But obviously the seedlings are coming out before, you know, and getting put in the ground. But as a polystyrene in soil, we use things like perlite that are light and fluffy balls. They're superheated. But the main reason for them is to aeration in the soil. So polystyrene would certainly physically do that, you know, as far as allow drainage in a heavy soil.
You used to use coke breeze, like a very small particles of coke in the old days. You used to use that in your soil.
Yeah, that's...
Same. Yeah. That's why I was thinking the same thing, like, was it going to do the same job, you know?
Look, I'd say physically it would do the same job. I've used it before in potting mixes to grow plants, not edibles, but the only thing I'd be worried about if it was an edible plant, and certainly if it was a plant that you were eating the leaves off, like, say, lettuce, there may be an issue there, but I don't think so. If anyone's got any more information on that, but I'd say physically they'd do the job. My only issue would be some kind of leaching of some kind of...
That's what I was afraid of. That's what I was afraid of, The other idea I've got some old plastic 6-inch stormwater pipe, and I was thinking of cutting holes in it and putting that in there mixed with compost or something like that too.
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't want to go hydroponics. That's too messy.
You can do a happy medium. I've tried, mucked around with sort of backyard hydroponics. I grew a strawberry in a bucket of blue metal with a fish tank pump just pouring water over the top of it, and it seemed to do well. So, look, there's many ways you can do it. Obviously, moisture is something you need to really control in that situation. But, no, I play around with it, I reckon, would be my advice.
Yeah, I might give it a go. Perlite might be the answer. It's a big sim with it and a few other concoctions, I suppose. Well,
Perlite's
thank you for that
very benign.
Good.
Yeah, no, pleasure. Thanks, mate.
Thank you very much, Peter. We have lines free at the moment on 1300 222 936 if you would like to give Tino a call.
Down the Garden Path, you're with Joel Reinberger and Tino Carnevali on ABC Radio Hobart and across Tasmania.
Now, Tino, I've got to ask you this question for my own little garden. What should a blueberry bush look like at the moment?
It should be sticks. Lovely sticks, but sticks. It
good, okay. That's what I've got, and I was worried about that because I've never had blueberries before, and we got given some sort of half-grown, well, like some fully-grown plants. Friends of ours who have a farm had pulled them out of the ground because they were going to be completely changing the use of that part of their garden, and they didn't want them anymore. And so we just got them, and they sat in our garden with a plastic bag around the roots for a couple of weeks until we got them planted. And look, they put on some new leaves back in the summertime and everything, so they seem to be alive, but then they're lost. And I was like, I don't know if they're meant to lose their leaves or not.
No, they're fine. They're doing exactly what they should do. And they're established plants, so you'll be cropping off them this year.
We actually got a couple of berries off the top of them last year, just a couple, which for me was a pretty nice thing because my son, it's one of the few fruits he'll actually eat is a blueberry.
Oh, blueberries are lovely.
And so what should I be doing with them now and leading into spring to give them the best kind of chance?
Well, I'd be mulching. Oh, in your garden, I'd be mulching just because of the chickweed might come up through it.
They're mulched. They're nicely mulched already. Yep.
Oh, lovely. Well, in that case, not really much until they start to shoot. You could throw down some pelletized chicken manure at the moment, and that'll sort of start to feed the ground by the time that we get the warmer weather through. But I'd be just enjoying it as an architectural piece in your garden, Joel. And then and then certainly, I mean, if you haven't pruned it and it's looking a little bit unruly, you can prune them.
No, they got kind of cut back before being pulled out of the ground for transport purposes. So I think they're actually all right pruning-wise.
That's fine. And if they grow well this year and give you a good crop, I'd be pruning them next year. If they're a young plant, usually with blueberries, you put them in the ground, I don't touch them for a couple of years, and usually I'll protect them with a bit of shade because I've lost a lot in that first and second summer to those really hot, dry conditions, and if there's a lack of water around, they keel over pretty quickly. But you've got a fairly shady summer backyard, I should say.
We do.
So that'd be good conditions. The only problem would be long term, is you might get less fruit than you would normally on a plant that's maybe in a full sun position.
Though interestingly, there's a development going up right behind my house. Like on two sides of my house, there's kind of a development going up. And I've got like a factory at the back of my house. So I've got like a two-story wall. Which it forms my back wall, essentially. My back fence is a two-story wall. Some of that's going to come down, and there is actually going to be extra sunshine falling exactly where the blueberries are this year. Oh,
lovely. Is the walnut tree going to be okay?
That's in a different yard, so that's still going to be fine. I'll still get that shade when the sun's at its highest. I'll get that shade on those areas when the sun's at its highest. But I'll actually get a little bit of extra sun in my corner of my yard in the morning, which will be lovely.
Oh, brilliant.
Let's see
blueberries.
Yeah, hopefully. Let's see if we can help Ali in Sandy Bay. Hello, Ali.
Hi, how are you?
Very well. What's up?
Well, I'm about to help a friend give her garden a once-over, and there's quite a few large, overgrown natives, bottle brushes and some tea trees that have been previously well-maintained, but not probably for the last 10 years or so. So my question is, when should we give them a decent haircut, and how far can we go?
As far as when, some of those varieties of bottle brush certainly are flowering or finished flowering. They're just finishing flowering, so you can sort of get in there and get them now. You usually cut back to where that that spike flower is, so that you can see sort of where the old flower has finished. You can cut sort of further back to the next junction point. As far as going too thick on bottle brushes, tea tree, depending on what type, they can cope a little bit better with it. But I found going into wood that is thicker than your arm or as thick as your arm, they tend not to enjoy it too much and they can tend to die back from that. But, you know, certainly if it's a healthy, vigorous plant, you can do it. And if you make your cuts nice and clean and you, you try and control them gently, I suppose, then you can prune them and they won't even blink. They'll be quite happy with it. But I usually go for things like that. I'll do it over a couple of years or a couple of seasons, and I'll just continue to sort of
question.
That's sort of the more gentler approach. Usually I'm a big one for going into a garden and pruning with a with a cold heart and a sharp saw. But in some cases I will concede that a little bit more gentleness and a couple more years to do it usually is the best way.
Right. So, we'll be kind and we'll stagger it over a couple of years then.
Well, and good on you for helping your mate out in the garden. It's a brilliant thing to garden with friends. So, yeah.
Oh, I think it's good a great way to spend an afternoon and it's so satisfying as well. So, thank you very much for your help.
No, pleasure.
Thank you, Ali. Good to hear from you this morning. Kate is in Hobart. Hello, Kate.
Hi, how are you going?
Yeah, good, Kate. How can we help?
I've got a tamarillo. I put it in the garden a couple of years ago. It's been pretty much fruiting ever since.
Yes.
But just recently I've noticed the leaves have got this sort of grey, silver mould, I guess mould, it is. Yeah. It's not a bug by the look of it. The leaves have all gone quite whitey, grey, mouldy looking and starting to fall off. But there is new regrowth happening and it's still heavily fruiting. But I just didn't know what to do. So I actually, when I was spraying my fruit trees with copper recently, I sprayed the tamarillo and that seems to have worked. But I'm not sure what the problem is.
It could be one of two things. I'd say you've probably got powdery mildew on the plant. And if you see those leaves, if you've got new shoots coming through, rip those old leaves off. And sort of dispose of them because they're sort of points of where that fungus will repropagate itself, I suppose, and jump onto other parts of the plant. And other plants in your garden as well. Is it quite high, the plant?
No. I can walk. It's like over my head. I'm 5 foot two, but I can can reach it. But so would spraying with the copper have done any?
It can help. I mean, the other thing it could be, if it's been on there for a while, is it could be two spotted mite, which is will cause a sort of webbing, silvery sort of webbing over the plant. And again, you can just pick those leaves off. One thing that might be really useful is to spray lime sulfur. Now, generally, lime sulfur I use during the warmer months. It tends to be more effective during a warmer day. But the good thing about it is it can control mites. It's a miticide, but it's also a mild fungicide as well. So if you spray some of that, you might be, if you've already hit it with the copper, then the lime sulfur hopefully will, if it is mites, will cover you for that as well.
Yeah, it looks kind of cobwebby on the back. Now I've got the leaves in the sun. It's kind of this sort of dusty, cobwebby looking.
Does it rub off?
No.
When you no, I,
no. Well, on the top, it doesn't on the top, but on the back where this dust sort of where this spiderwebby stuff is.
Yeah, it might be two-spotted mites.
No, it doesn't actually.
And you can't see two-spotted mites under a. You need a microscope for those little guys. They're quite small, so. I'd be using the lime sulfur. It's very cheap. It's very safe to use. It's just lime and sulfur mixed together, so it smells pretty bad. So have a wash afterwards. But yeah, you'll be cool. try spraying that on and spray on twice. But really, a good way of controlling it is by picking. If you've got other new leaves coming through, is to pick off the old daggy affected leaves and put them in a plastic bag and burn them or chuck them in the bin.
Okay, thank you so
not
much.
Not in the plastic bag, Bunny. Cool. No, my pleasure.
Okay, thanks,
Tino. Have a great one.
Thank you very much, Kate. Best of luck with that one. Now, here's a woman after your heart, a fellow olive grower. It's Melissa in Franklin. Hey. Hello, Melissa.
Hello, Joel. Hello, Tino. I'm not
G'day,
an olive
Melissa.
Grower yet, but I'm living in Oh,
you no. No, I'm looking at my first, seven trees in the ground. So technically I'm not one either, but it's in the heart.
You're an olive tree grower at this stage. Maybe there'll be olives later.
Yes, that's a distinction.
So that's what I would want to know is what's the best time of year for me to plant olives and a couple of good varieties to grow in Tassie for eating?
Look, as far as when's the best time to plant it, now is really good. After fruiting, a whole bunch of the nurseries as well have just got olives in, so they're nice and fresh plants. So putting them in now is great, but I've planted them all year round successfully, and you know they're a tough plant as long as they're given the adequate water if they're planted during the drier months. But as far as variety goes, they're a funny one because you get sort of Spanish gardeners, and they're like, well, the Spanish varieties are the best, like the Albertinas, etc. You get the Greek gardeners, and it's the Kalamatas, and the Kalamatas are really good table olive, but in our climate, unless you're in a slightly warmer pocket, a little warmer microclimate, you tend not to get as good a fruit off them, or as certainly the quantity. But some people around the state do get them. But being sort of partially Italian heritage, I would probably go with, I really like the Frantoia, which is a sort of dual. It's quite an oily one. Like you use it for oil, but I like it as a table as well. So
and what's it called? Sorry,
Frantoia is the name.
How's that spelt?
Frant.
This is where the show falls apart. Someone asked Tino to spell something.
I had like, there's 13 vowels in that. Frant, so F-R-A-N-T, and then Oya, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll work on that.
And look, the pollinator, sorry.
Yeah, no, you're right, you go.
Oh, the pollinator for that is usually Pendolino is the one. But other good ones that grow really well here, that's otherwise known as the Paragon, I think is the other name they give to it. But really good ones for here are things like the Missions, the Manzanillos, and there's one that's called UC571. It's called California Queen. It's otherwise sold as, and that's one of the California ones. It does really well here as well. So, hopefully that sends you in the right direction.
It does. And the other part of my question was about asparagus plants in polytunnels. I'm about to build a polytunnel around existing garden beds.
Yep.
But the asparagus is in there. Should I move the asparagus to another spot, or will it be okay in the polytunnel?
It will be okay in the polytunnel. It's probably best outside, though. If you've got your polytunnel, you've got minimal space, and asparagus is either way, you know, it's going to do all right in the polytunnel, but it's probably better outside using up space there. So just if you're going to harvest it, if you do it now and you dig it up and you move it, you could either divide it if you wanted more plants. Obviously, it's an opportunity to do that. But if you do that, you will need to wait 1 or maybe 2 years before you fully harvest from it. Now, you can still, you know, pick off a spear here and there. That's okay. Mm-hmm. But just make sure that those individual plants or that parent plant has enough time to settle in and build up its carbohydrates again so it can keep producing from, well, for decades to come. So,
brilliant.
Yeah. Cool, mate.
That's great.
Thank you, Melissa. Best of luck there.
Good luck, yeah. Exciting things in that garden.
I do love the, Tino, the first two names that you came up with there on the olives. It sounds like an Italian law firm, Frantoia and Pendolino. It's just such a great...
Your partners in law.
Yeah. It's just such a rolls off the tongue so beautifully, doesn't it?
Yeah, those romantic languages are named romantic languages for a reason. You know, everything sounds better in French. So.
Oh, look, no, I think Italian is definitely the most musical language, I've got to say. Now, can you have a little look at the texts?
Yes.
And that row of green photos you can see there, Barbara has just rung to talk about that. We'll be with her in 30 seconds to answer her questions. Yep.
Gardening Talkback with Tino and Joel. Call 1-300-222-936 or text 0438-922-936.
So you can text us on 0438 922 936, as Barbara has done, but she's also given us a call so she can talk about the photos that she sent through to us. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning.
Good morning, Barbara.
Tell us about the issue you've got going on in your garden.
I've got a fully enclosed garden, so hopefully it's blossom-proof. I've planted a lot of brassicas, a lot of turnips, little mini turnips, and silver beets. The silver beet started to look like just white stalks for a little while. Then whatever's in there is growing in number, because now they've eaten all my cauliflower, they've eaten all...
Yes.
They're on to now my last batch of broccoli. And every morning I come out and the plants are diminishing. I think you can see in the photo they're eating off about 6 inches.
I know, it's devastating. look, it's small. There's a photo you've got there where they've tried to sort of tunnel in or out, and it's small. It looks like it's either at mice at this time of the year. You're in Cunha, are you?
Yes, Cunha.
Yeah, there's usually a lot of hay bales around this time of the year. There's a lot of cattle being fed, and the mice sort of get in underneath those hay bales, and as soon as you move those hay bales, they dash everywhere, and they can move into different areas. So it's usually around this period that I've been noticing here in Primadina that we get that sort of increase of mice or rodent activity. Something like that, though... They're really hammering it. So there's either quite a few of them, or you've got something slightly larger like a rat or even a bandicoot. We have things like the long-tailed mice here as well, and the antechinus. So any of those things could be the culprits, I suppose. Certainly, blocking up gaps. You've got a really good enclosure. It seems like a very, very a well-built thing. So
it really does. It's quite a little construction. It's a Taj Mahal of gardens there.
Yes, I've been building it over the last few months. So
it's great.
Got rooms in it too, so it's quite exciting. But it doesn't matter about that. They seem to get underneath.
Yes.
Some other way.
One thing you can do is run what's called a skirt around the outside. Mm-hmm. So that's I've run one off mine. It's a 30-centimetre bit of mesh that runs out on the ground, and that way they start digging within that 30 centimetres. They hit your mesh and, they stop. Hopefully they don't step back 30 centimetres and try again. But that's obviously... You can get that down to sort of a couple of centimetre mesh sizes. The only problem with that I've found is lizards and that can sometimes get stuck in that. But the other thing could be, lights can sometimes work. Radios. A gentleman that grows the giant pumpkins puts a radio next to his just to keep any rodents or anything away. So these are all diversion or deterrents, I suppose. But... you've built a nice big structure. It seems a shame to have to do extra work for it. So,
Tino, they seem to be living, or whatever it is. I've got a Kelpie, and she digs under a corrugated, get those oval corrugated gardens. And this one has no base, so I put a lot of bracken and sticks and things in the bottom, and then I filled it up with soil. I've got a feeling whatever's there might be under there.
Yes. So, I was just going to say, you've got the bit of wood there that's holding your fence down. Little things like that where they can get in underneath and actually they're protected. So what you might want to do before you replant is actually go through the whole garden, rip out all those dead things, although some of those will come back, even in saying that, so not all is lost. But if you dig around the edges where they may be found, they might have found a little spot there. The only other thing is potentially to either you could put in a live trap, so just an animal trap that will trap them in there, and then you can identify what it is. If it is mice, then you can control them that way, or if it is something else, then you can relocate. Although I think mice, it's sounding more and more like it's okay. Mice, but and yeah, certainly pulling out things like that where you've got piles of sticks or whatever, where you've got air gaps through the middle of it, or where they can tunnel and be protected. So minimising those areas in your garden can also help. And yeah, sorry, mate. That's okay. So disappointing, though.
Is the oval tin garden kind of outside of the great wall that you've built there?
No, it's inside.
It's so inside.
Really, yeah, they're really protected from birds because they're inside the enclosure.
is the garden is the tin garden currently full of plants?
Sorry?
No,
they've been dug up now by the dogs, and I pulled a lot out.
Well, that's what I was going to suggest, is actually you just turn it over and let the dog actually solve the problem for you.
Yes, that's a very good idea. Okay, well, you've validated my hunches. Thank you so much.
No, pleasure. Best of luck, mate.
Good on you, Barbara. Good luck with that one. Thank you. Barbara in Coonya there. Her veggies are being eaten by mice. Also on the text, Gail in Launceston says, I watched the Gardening Australia YouTube re-pruning dwarf golden delicious apples, and it suggested pruning in January with leaf on. I thought July was best. What are your thoughts?
Both. It depends on what you want to do. The tree will behave differently or react differently to each pruning. Your winter prunings are usually easier because you can see what you're doing, and you can be quite brutal on them because the trees are in dormancy. But what that does is that promotes vegetative growth in the plant the following season. Whereas if you are controlling that tall lateral growth, because your summer prune is generally not as heavy, but you're controlling that that growth, that young growth that shoots to the sky, and pulling all that off. And what that does is it can promote better flowering and fruit set the next following season. But also what we use that pruning for is to, certainly on apples, and is to open up the tree and allow a bit of sunlight down into the middle of the tree to allow that fruit to ripen a bit better. So, yeah, but every situation is different, obviously. In some areas, you might get a lot of rain and a lot of wind during certain point that time of the year, so you might leave a little bit more on to protect that fruit. So just depends where you are and what you're trying to do. So either summer or winter.
Des is in Rokeby. Good morning, Des.
Well, good morning, fellas.
G'day, Des.
G'day, mate. My problem is I've just been doing some drainage work. Now, I've dug some clay up. I thought, now, could I use it on the veggie garden? If I put lime on it, will that break it down? Break the clay down?
Yeah, look, yeah. Is it subsurface clay? Is it clay you dug from, like, 50 centimetres? Look, the problem with using that on your soil, if your soil is sort of a clay base anyway, if it's quite a heavy soil, is what you're doing is you're inverting the soil profile. So basically you're bringing all that heavy stuff up to the top that doesn't drain well, and you can sort of cause problems in the way the soil works, I suppose. Sure. And that could be good for some plants, but certainly for veggies and stuff, if it's too wet around that zone, they tend to just rot off. Things like lettuce don't love it. But if you're in a sandier soil, then, yeah, by all means, you can turn it into a slurry and put that down. But your question with the lime, I mean, lime is a good sort of, or calcium, I should say. Soils that are rich in calcium tend to be a bit more friable, a bit looser. So certainly it does help. Look, if it's a small amount... Oh, sorry.
I've been told that if you sort of put lime on the clay as it is, and just leave it for a while, that the lime breaks it down, if you like, gets in amongst it. But I don't know whether that's right or not.
Yeah, look, we did a planted out a bunch of trees. We had a quick turnover, and we used hydrated lime or builder's lime, and we put a good dose of that in with the soil, and the clay just, it burst it apart. It almost exploded apart. So, yes, it can do it, but it can also leach through quickly as well, so you can end up with that clay will break up. And then you've kind of left with the still with the clay on the top. But if it's a choice of not, I'm musing about this one. I'm sort of, but you could give it a go. I don't think the negative effects of it would be too bad. But just it's just something to watch out for.
I just sort of stuck with this heap of clay, and I didn't want to sort of take it to the tip and.
Mate. No.
Can I use it or not?
Have you got a compost bin?
No, I haven't.
Because you can sort of slowly mix it through your compost. But I want to say, have you thought of pottery? But it's probably not even very good clay for that. You could try. One other thing you could do is if you've got. You could try digging your topsoil out, putting the clay in underneath and putting your topsoil over the top. But how much are we talking about? Are we talking truckloads or wheelbarrow loads?
Yeah, probably a barrel load,
I'd do, if it's that much, I'd do what your plan was. Put a bit of lime with it, play around with it, put some organic material into it. So mix some, some compost or even just some grass clippings some old leaves and see if that breaks it apart and keep working it. And I reckon you'll end up having a decent mix after a while with a clay base.
Yeah. All right, thank you for your help.
Cheers, my pleasure, mate. Sorry to be so circular around the bush.
Good on you, Des. Thank you kindly. Coming in on the text, which is 0438 922 936, someone saying, can you please tell me what's the easiest way to propagate hazelnuts? Is it worth bothering with, or should I just stump up the cost and buy more? I'm looking to plant around 30.
If it's that many, you can propagate them off the tree. They do tend to sucker very readily from the base, or they certainly send up young shoots. So you can get those. You can do that now with a sharp knife or a screwdriver. Flathead screwdriver is always a good tool for it. And you can sort of take those young shoots off right near the base of the plant. But if you want that many, you want name varieties, then I'd be buying them in bulk. But certainly, if you've got a good variety, you know what it is. And you've got pollinators, then by all means.
Can you do a cutting just off the tips of the branches?
You can do. It's going to be, unless you can do a hardwood cutting off them, and you could stick that in the ground and try them. Use a little bit of hormone, so you're getting those auxins that help with that callusing and then the root development. Give that a go, but you might not get as high a success rate as if you just tried for the rootstock or the root shoots that come out. So, yeah. But either way, give it a go or buy them. It's kind of 50-50, hedging all my bets.
If you've got a question for Tina, give us a call. We have lines free. 1-300-222-936 is the number. We do have some text to deal with, Tino, on 0438 922 936. Lynn in Launceston says, can you tell me what to spray roses with after pruning? And should I feed after pruning or wait?
I would wait. You can feed straight away if it's a more slow release or it's organic fertilizer and manures, compost, etc. They'll work their way down in there, and the plant will benefit from them come the spring or next month. If you're going for a faster release, then I'd wait until next month to do it. Something like a liquid feed, I'd do it as the buds start to sort of develop or the days start to warm up. As far as the spraying, now's a good time to spray. You could use anything. My advice would be there is a copper fungicide out there, depending on what type of rose it is. Most of them are very susceptible to things like black spots. So you could use a fungicide that uses potassium carbonate, bicarbonate, I think. It's potassium bicarbonate. And you'll find those from most of your nurseries, and they're pretty safe to use, which is great.
Meg from Newtown says, is it too late to spray my apricot tree with copper spray? Some buds have just appeared, but they haven't burst open into flowers.
No, now is the perfect time. Actually, thank you for reminding me. That was going to be something I was going to say at the beginning. Now's a perfect time to be going out there looking and seeing if your apricot buds or your stone fruit buds are starting to swell. They'll change colour, and you're looking at those spear buds. They're the leaf buds that are coming out. And if you're spraying for curly leaf, concentrate on those buds and any sort of nooks and crannies on the plant. But generally speaking, the fungus resides on the little scales that are on those buds and then just jumps out onto your leaf as the leaf pops out. So doing it now and then monitoring it and doing it every 7 to 10 days up until those leaves burst out, and hopefully you'll control your curly leaf this year. So cheers for that. James, thanks for the reminder.
Jane in New Norfolk asks us, she says, some of my indoor cyclamen have curled leaves with bronzing underneath, and I think it's cyclamen mite. I tried submerging one plant in warm water for 15 to 30 minutes, but this seems to have been terminal. Yeah. Any suggestions? Now, there's a photo on the text line there. She says, this one is 10 years old. I don't want to lose it. Doesn't affect flowering. Seems to have spread from a newly introduced plant last year. Yes. And look, the flowers on that cyclamen in the photo are just spectacular.
You've got to love a good cyclamen.
Really beautiful pink flowers. But the leaves going crazy underneath. So cyclamen mite, does that sound likely?
Yeah, rust mite would be the term I'd probably know. What you want to do is get some, again, the lime sulfur. It's a really good one to use. It's a good solid miticide and can work very well. So spray the underside of the leaves, pick off really badly affected leaves, lime sulfur and a couple of applications might need to be done. So, and take it outside, obviously, because as I told the last lady, it's pretty stinky. It smells like rotten eggs. So, that should be a cheap, easy way of controlling it. So, yeah.
Another text says, tell that bloke to break up the clay with gypsum, see attached photo. And he's got a photo of a particular commercial brand of natural gypsum clay breaker.
Well, gypsum is the clay breaker, most definitely. And I assumed that was the clay, the lime he was talking about to break up the soil. Gypsum works really well on most of our clays. It works very well on reactive clay. So that's where, I reckon, great advice. That's where that gentleman, I think, will be working his soil quite well. So, yeah.
Peter is in Acton Park. Good morning to you, Peter.
Good morning, Joel. Good morning, Tino.
G'day, Pete. How can we help?
I read your article this morning in the Mercury regarding strawberries. I just want to share one quick thing with you. Something I've been doing now for a few years, I grow them in hanging baskets.
Yeah. Yes.
And I've got three of them outside my back door growing under sort of semi-cover, and that keeps me in strawberries basically the whole summer. And the birds don't like it because they can't sort of get up there to eat them. They don't like hanging off the side of the basket. And I just dip them in a bucket of sort of fish emulsion sort of fertilizer a couple of times during the summer.
Brilliant.
And they've got to be watered every day, of course.
And it keeps the slugs and snails away from them as well.
That's what made me think of this morning when you were talking about slugs and snails. They don't go anywhere near them.
Yeah.
And they grow mad and they just hang there and just go along and just pick them off.
That's it. There's something very nice about that. Just out of interest, what varieties are you growing?
Can't answer that. They've been there for many years,
cool.
And I have sort of taken a few runners off a couple of years ago and just stuck them back in the soil. I've no idea what sort they are, but they do grow like mad.
and many years, because normally strawberries are only a few years before they start, coughing and dying, aren't they?
Yeah, I usually get 2 or 3 years out of it.
Yep. Yeah, until you're replacing every so often. Yeah, no, it's great. No, thanks very much. I do love being able to pick fruit at head height, because strawberries are lovely and they're fantastic, but you've got to do a lot of bending to go and get your reward, which,
true.
Whereas you're taking all that out of it.
I just like the idea there's no slugs and snails.
yeah, and you're right with the birds, and they're easy to maintain. So thanks, mate.
Good on you, Peter. Thank you.
Thank you.
That is also, mate, of course, poodle-proof, which is becoming more and more important in my house.
Yeah, yes. The old strawberry-eating poodles.
Yeah, if she can eat lavender, which is a very unpleasant thing to eat, she can eat kind of anything. Colleen is in Burnie. Hello.
Yeah, hello. My topic has already just been taken because I was going to say gypsum is the clay breaker.
Oh, righty. Yes, yep. Have you been using that in your yard too, Colleen?
No, but it certainly needs it. But how often do you use it?
Well, it depends on... Look, gypsum is this Band-Aid solution. If you've got heavy clay and you can't dig it and you've got boggy issues happening, then throw some gypsum down and it'll break that clay apart. As I said, it works best on reactive clays, but to be honest, it works on all soils. It can help bind sand together. It can help break clay apart. But what you want to be doing is adding it. Usually it's a good handful, I think two handfuls even in certain situations, every square meter. But it'll break the clay apart, but then you need to add something like organic material in the form of compost to keep that'll get in between the clay particles that are blown apart, and it'll help keep them apart. But if you just put more gypsum on, then it'll slowly leach down through the soil, and the clay will bind back to itself and go back to what it was. So, once, you know, in heavy situations, I'd be doing it once every year and then adding organic material after that. And then you'll usually find after about the second, even after the first year, but second year, you'll have a more friable soil that you can just continue to dig. And if you keep adding organic material and putting more plants in, which also helps, then, yeah, you can end up with a nice friable soil to work with. So,
This isn't my soil. It's my friend's soil. But it's just about impossible. It's
to
just
dig.
So hard to dig.
Yes.
It took all day to remove the strawberry plants.
Oh, yeah, it can be. Soils can be soul destroying, but back destroying as well. You could also build up, like mounding up can also help, and that also helps with the drainage issues that usually occur in gardens that have that kind of heavy soil. But the hydrated lime or the builder's lime, which is kind of a different beast to use, it can actually be quite caustic on your skin, so that's where I should have said use gloves. But that can actually break the soil apart as well, almost longer term, I've found. Like, I think it's just that extra calcium hit that you're hitting onto the soil that helps to keep that clay apart. So, but either way,
good on you, Colleen. Mate. Thank you kindly. Robin's in Tiana. Hello there, Robin.
Morning, Joel. Morning, Tino.
Morning, Robin. How can we help?
I've been extending my garden beds up here, but I have everything covered over with, you know, black netting and things like that because of the possums and the rat bags.
Yeah.
The cabbage can't eat everything. I already had some potatoes to chit, and a friend gave me another big, like two-thirds of a small box full. And I'd had some bales of straw from last year. So under one of these larger nettings, I wanted to try the potatoes this year on a bit of straw. But I just wanted your input, please, as to, you know, if I put like lots of paper down on the basic ground and then I put the straw on top of that, and I've got lots of like soil that I can compost with soil that I've built in, but it's good stuff. Yeah. What else do I have to put in it, and how do I actually manage the layering and that sort of thing?
Well, the biggest thing I've found with growing things in straw or straw bale gardening, I think somebody coined the term once in a book, is the air. There's too much air in it. You need to add a lot of that finer part, you know, things like your compost to it around where the plants are growing, and obviously keep it nice and wet to try and allow those layers to sort of settle down.
I wasn't going to fan the straw out too much because I was going to put a very thick solid base layer down to keep the weeds down and all that sort of stuff, and then put dirt on top. Got compost that I've made, homemade compost on top of that, put the potatoes on top of that soil compost blend, and then cover them over again with more straw?
With straw, and then when you earth them up, you can either hit, I usually use it that first stage of healing up, earthing up, when they start to break the surface. I usually use something fine then, like a compost or a soil, and then after that you can just use straw. But I found that first earthing up, they like that little bit of extra weight, I suppose, around their new shoots. So but yeah, no, it's and you might need to feed as well. So you might need to be quite heavy on your lashings of blood and bone or organic fertilizer as the plants are growing, just to give them that extra. They're quite a hungry plant, and things like straws and that can be quite nutrient deficient because they're just straw. But where if you've got enough compost and you put enough manure over the top, then yeah, you'll be right. You'll get a lovely crop. Yeah, and at the end of the season when they're really sort of either fruiting, depending on flowering or fruiting, give them good amounts of water. Then you'll plump them up at that stage, and you'll get hopefully a nice big crop of big spuds. So yeah.
Okay. So for the ones that I've just had given to me, they've got those little long tendrils on. So if I take the long tendrils off and then chip them properly?
Well, if they've already got shoots, if they're really long like octopi, then I would probably, they've already put all that energy into growing them, so I'd knock most of them off except for the one strongest one, and then I'd put them straight in the ground. Yeah, as is. If they've kind of chitted themselves already in that case, they've just extended, it's an extended chit, and then, and then put them in. I've just had my spuds popping up now, and, they'll sort of grow over the next month, and then I'll heal them up. But I'm going to put in a new block of potatoes as well this coming week. So,
I'll get them in over the next couple of weeks, and hopefully we won't have another minus three very heavy frost like we did yesterday morning. The front paddock was white.
and bearing in mind, if you do chip them up, you know, they can break the surface in a week, but generally it's a couple of weeks' grace. So if you do wait for a couple of weeks and then they break the surface in a couple of weeks, hopefully you'll be past your frost anyway. So hopefully, fingers crossed.
Thanks for the info.
Good on you, Robin. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Robin in Tiana there on ABC Radio Hobart and across Tasmania. We're going to speed attempt to do the last call, I think, Tino.
Okay.
All right. We've got literally a minute.
2 minutes.
So, Sue in La Trobe, you've got 30 seconds to tell us what's going on.
G'day, Sue.
Hi there, Tino. I had 17 blackwood trees mulched yesterday, and I just want to know how acidy this mulch would be to put around plants, etc.
If you're putting them around natives or shrubs, even a lot of perennial, you'll be fine. I usually break it down for a month or two first. If you're putting it around sort of more, if it's around natives and even fruiting trees or ornamental trees, you'll be fine. Just chuck it straight down. Being a legume, I don't think there's too much in the way of negative oils in them, so you should be okay.
Yes, all right.
Good on you, Sue.
Mostly blackwoods, a couple of pine trees as well.
Oh, in that case, if it's not around your veggies or little sort of delicate perennial ornamental plants, then I wouldn't worry. I'd chuck it straight on the ground and you'll be right.
Excellent. Tino, nicely done. Speed read in the last second. Thank you, mate. Talk to you next week.
See you guys. Bye.